Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and joining me today, as usual, is Alex Brown. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me again, Graham.
And today we're going to do another episode of Wiretaps. I've lost count, Alex. We've done a lot of these and people seem to be enjoying it. So we just kind of are, you know, plowing ahead. We're going to go over a handful of candidacies that have been handpicked by Alex, who many of you know spends a lot of time responding to your posts on the website along with me. But Alex is far and away in the lead for most comments ever on the Clear Admit website. So we're going to dive in and we're going to look at an interesting group of candidates today. I think, you know, over the last few episodes, Alex and I have been, you know, kind of waxing poetic about how awesome all these candidates are. And I think some of you might feel like, oh, there's not enough variety in terms of the people we're talking about. And today we kind of run the gamut. You know, we got somebody who's interested in an online MBA. We've got folks with kind of low GPAs and don't have all the numbers that are needed yet. So we're going to talk through some candidacies that, you know, face some additional challenges and really, you know, hopefully give some good advice, help these folks get into school too. So Alex, let's start with Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person has a 3.9 and 6 years of work experience, located on the East Coast of the United States, and they have been working in product development as like an asset, an asset management company, if I understand correctly. And after business school, they would like to kind of stay in asset management. And you know, they get into their goals a little bit in the comments, so we'll talk through that. But they're looking to start school in the fall of 2020. And for now, they have Indiana Kelly, UMD, which is University of Maryland, the Smith School of Business, and there was one other school that they kind of mentioned. Now I'm kind of losing track here, but they're looking around. I guess the reason they put others because they're open to kind of other ideas here. And I think one thing that's really important to note here is that, you know, this candidate they're trying to narrow down what's out there in the kind of part-time business school program front and even online as well. And they're really kind of concerned about cost and value. And I got the sense that, you know, based on the comments, you know, this person is kind of, you know, a little bit shying away from the full-time experience for both cost reasons, but also it sounds like they're starting a family, right? If I remember correctly on this one, Alex. So why don't you, there was quite a bit of exchange that we had on the site with this candidate. Do you want to kind of walk us through what you think should be considered here?
Sure. But before I do that, Graham, let me ask you directly, product development, asset manager, what do you think about his work? I believe his work experience.
I mean, it sounds interesting. You know, the first thing I thought of is, oh, is this person working at a place like Vanguard or Fidelity, like setting up new products that they're offering to investors? Obviously, we didn't get a ton of detail, but it seemed potentially promising. And I think, you know, he did say, like, he's at a $1 trillion plus, it's $1 trillion plus asset manager. So this is, you know, a big reputable firm that he's working with. And I also got the sense he kind of wants to stay there and grow and, you know, have the MBA as a feather in his cap to kind of move up. So I didn't have a problem with the work experience. I think it's actually, you know, 6 years, I guess it's, you know, a little bit above average in terms of the length, and it may be a little less traditional because it's not as though he's working as an investment banker or a consultant or something, but it was interesting experience to me, and there's sort of a lot of potential.
Yeah, I mean, that was my perspective, and I just wanted to get it sort of confirmed by how you interpreted the work experience. The person has a really strong GPA, right? Regardless of what school they went to, and I don't think we know, a 3.9 GPA is a very strong effort. And it just seems curious that they want to apply to a program that will offer them a GMAT waiver. What do you think of that decision?
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I kind of jumped out. That jumped out at me. They had a note at the end of their post where they said, note, I'd be actively looking for a GMAT waiver. And that really struck me because I thought, yeah, 3.9, imagine this person takes the test and gets a great score. All of a sudden, all kinds of doors are open for them, whether it's full-time, part-time, maybe even, you know, someday executive if they wait a couple more years. Like, there's just sort of sky's the limit. And I thought, why so worried about the GMAT? I mean, look, I'll be the first to say it's not fun to take the GMAT exam. I don't much remember enjoying it, but it's still, you know, it's something that's sort of part of the process. And if it were to open, because my deal is that I think most of the reputable business schools are requiring a GMAT, at least at the kind of full-time or part-time level, until you get into the kind of executive MBA programs, where sometimes they'll use GMAC's executive assessment test, which is a little bit different, or they will have a waiver. And there are some part-time programs that allow you to apply for a waiver, but I just didn't understand. It's sort of like it was really limiting the options right out of the gate, in my view, and maybe, you know, closing some doors. Yeah,
I would agree with that, and especially with the 3.9 GPA. Clearly, the person is smart. They're doing well at work, according to our interpretation of what we're reading. It just makes sense to me to knuckle down, prepare well for the test, get the score that reflects who you are, which one would presume it's going to be in that 700 band, and then really understand their options. They're looking essentially part-time online because they basically want to move up in their organization or in their industry. They're not looking for a career switch. And that's perfectly fine, I think. And they're looking to start a family, or they have a family, I forget which of the two, but they have family considerations too. The two counterpoints to that I would raise is always think long term when you're applying for your MBA. So while in the short run it might make sense to do a part-time online, but in the long run, would it have made better sense to go full-time and sort of build that network and so forth? So bear that in mind, and also to consider that, you know, at these full-time programs, and not just to push the full-time format, I clearly understand some people are better off part-time online, but in the full-time program, there will be others with young families, you know, there'd be resources available for young families. So bear that in mind. And there might be, I think the person said they're in Maryland. I mean, you know, Wharton's not too terribly far away, and, you know, New York City for programs up there. So there are very good programs not too terribly far from that region of the country.
Yeah, I guess one thing that I also just noted in this candidate is that it sounded like they kind of had a start in, I kind of wonder if they're like a liberal arts grad or something, because they started out as a writer in their company, you know, probably doing some marketing stuff, and they transitioned over to compliance, he mentions, and then started to oversee large-scale audits. He took all the, you know, different, what do you call it, the sort of licensing exams to be, you know, active in the field that he's in, with respect to, you know, investment management. So it's kind of a really interesting story of someone's journey from kind of a more qualitative role into, you know, real business stuff. And he mentioned, or she, I think it's a he, but it could be a she, mentioned this idea of getting into, you know, kind of strategic roles within the business, the company that he or she's working for, right? So I you know, it's a great story. It's like, here's someone who actually really needs this degree, maybe because they didn't have a lot of this stuff as an art. So yeah, I couldn't help but think, you know, yeah, one other thing, by the way, is that, you know, like you say, sometimes going to business school isn't the worst time to have a child. There are a lot of people having kids or recently having had kids at Wharton. When I was there, we see it across the board. There are partners clubs, there are kids clubs. And, you know, while business school is a fast-paced, you know, busy time, it has a lot more flexibility than a job does. So, like, if you're in a full-time MBA program, you know, you can actually structure your day to kind of have a few hours to look after a young child or something if you need to, right? So it's not, it doesn't have the rigidity of, like, a full-time job. So, again, we don't know this person's full story, but I thought, wow, this seems like a really interesting evolution in terms of their career. And I did make some suggestions to them about, oh, what about at UNC? If they really are insistent on kind of online or part-time, you know, go for the really, you know, the schools like, I mean, Indiana's a great one. I know less about University of Maryland, but, you know, making sure they're casting a wide enough net. And like, as you said, you know, I couldn't help but think, well, what about, I mean, gosh, you know, Georgetown's in your backyard too. So there are a lot of options out there, but I think they need to first decide, like, what do they want out of this and how risky is it to kind of start a family and start business school and take on debt. I think in the end of the day, if the career evolves the way they want it to, a couple years out of the workforce may not be the worst thing, you know, in terms of, you know, the return on investment is going to be pretty high. So that was my take on this one.
And I think we can both agree that we would really encourage this candidate to take the GMAT test.
Yeah, or you know, or the GRE, but take a test. Like, don't limit your access to programs because of the test. It just didn't make sense to me. All right, so let's move on. So Wiretap's candidate number two, we have someone with a 730 and a 367. They've worked for 6.5 years, located in San Francisco, want to stay in the U.S. after business school. They're currently a product manager at a health tech company, and after business school, they're hoping to get into consulting, and a couple of the companies they mentioned maybe targeting are Deloitte and PwC, looking to start business school next fall, and the list of schools is Berkeley, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and Wharton, so sort of M7 less Columbia plus Berkeley. And so good list of schools there, certainly challenging list. And this person shared with us that they were pre-med at UCLA and worked in a research lab. And then they kind of moved to San Francisco from LA and transitioned to the business side of healthcare. So pretty radical shift, right? I mean, going from kind of being pre-med and working in a lab all the way into kind of the business side of things. And I think, you know, they kind of have been bitten by the business bug and really like the kind of the healthcare domain. So, you know, it seems like that's, you know, they have a good reason, right, for getting an MBA, because obviously if you're pre-med, you probably didn't, you know, do a lot of finance or some of the traditional things. So I think, you know, I understand the case here. What was your take on this candidate?
Well, actually, I really thought this candidate is very strong. Numbers are very good, obviously. Pre-med, I mean, like you say, the experience, I think, is very good. Also, out-of-work experience, extracurriculars, is strong.
Oh, yeah. What is a Bollywood instructor? Did you know what that meant? I wasn't really sure.
No, but I was going to ask you about that. Do you think this person has of Indian heritage?
Yeah, so I'm assuming, yeah, my guess is that Indian heritage, they're a Bollywood instructor, which I presume, and they said they teach it to inner city youth, and I'm guessing that it might be, I don't know enough about Bollywood films and stuff, but I do know enough to know that there's often a lot of song and dance, and so maybe this is kind of a, you know, teaching kids dance and song, or I don't really know, but it sounded fun, and I think it did clue me in that, okay, this person might be of Indian descent. Maybe was headed down the pre-med route, which we do see, you know, a lot of Asian Americans head down that route, and then just had this kind of shift heading up to San Francisco, doing the business thing. I think that does risk putting them in a overrepresented, you know, segment of the applicant pool to an extent. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously they did undergrad in the U.S. at a good school, so a little different than, say, applying as an Indian from India. And we don't really know the full story here, right? So it's hard to, I don't want to jump to conclusions about, you know, we think this person might be of Indian heritage, but hard to say, right? So, any other thoughts though? I mean, I agree. Good, you know, numbers are strong.
Yeah. That would be my biggest point, piece of advice though, is if that is the case, just make sure to apply to schools to the extent that the candidate can in round one, if the candidate is from an overrepresented group. Everything about this candidate sounds super interesting. If they've got all their ducks in a row, round one, please get your candidacy in before your profile gets over, you know, before round one decisions are in, you're applying round two and there's less space available and so on and so forth. Other than that, great execution on the application should see some really good opportunities, I would think.
Yeah, and I mentioned that the numbers didn't blow me out of the water given the schools on the list. So, you know, 730 is sort of average at some of these schools, and the same with a 3.6. I mean, it's certainly sufficient, but I think that becomes more into play if, in fact, this person belongs to maybe an oversubscribed portion of the candidate pool. So, yeah, round one would be great. It did occur to me that if this person has an interest in, you know, kind of continuing with healthcare in some capacity, you know, on the business side, he or she does say that they want to make an impact in that domain, you know, kind of short-term consulting, long-term product strategy, that right away got me thinking about some of these joint or specialized degree programs, you know, whether it's Wharton's healthcare management offering, which, as some of our listeners may know, healthcare management is the only major at Wharton that requires you to kind of pre-declare as you're applying. And they have a slightly different admissions process, but that's a great way into Wharton and into kind of, you know, great roles in healthcare. Similarly, HBS has a new program in biotech life sciences that's an MBA/master's in biotech that's a, you know, 2 years. You don't spend any extra time to combine the degrees. So anyway, just wanted to make sure this person's thinking about exactly what's out there and on offer. Other than that, I mean, the school list is high caliber, so.
Yeah, no, it's high caliber. Maybe they could consider a program like Duke, which is obviously very strong in this domain also.
Yeah, good advice.
As an additional thought. But overall, clearly, this is, again, another potentially very strong candidate with great execution. And like Graham, I was kind of curious about what a Bollywood instructor actually means, and I'm sure that just shows yet another interesting dimension of a personality.
Yeah, and we should have we got to create an email address so people can email us, you know, answers to things that we often ponder on the podcast here. So I'll work to get that set up. We'll mention that in an episode to come. We want to know what Bollywood instructor means. So let's move on to the next candidate today. So this is, let's see, Wiretap's candidate number 3. This person has a 330 on the GRE. We didn't get a GPA from the person. I think they explained that in the comments. 3 years of work experience. They've been doing real estate valuation and development advisory, and they want to use the MBA to get into consulting, ideally to work for Bain or McKinsey. Starting business school next fall in 2020, and targeting Columbia, Stern, Booth, Wharton, and Yale. This person mentioned she is a woman from Vietnam who studied in England for 9 years. I guess that probably includes some undergraduate and did, I guess the bachelor's was from LSE, some time in France studying language. The GRE that she provided is actually going to expire, so she's going to need to retake it, but I'm not overly concerned about that. 330 is a great score, so I'm assuming that with a little work, she'll get there and get another good score. So I guess, you know, the thing is, you know, this sort of, she wanted to know if she's like overrepresented in the pool. And so I wanted to just turn it over to you and like, what do you think of this candidacy? I have some thoughts, but I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the candidate's overrepresented in the pool, being from Vietnam. And obviously having to retake the GRE is a little bit of a hurdle that she's got to overcome, but having already gotten a 330, you would imagine that she will do well with good preparation in taking the test again. Overall, I think this would be a pretty good candidate. What do you think of the work experience side of it, Graham, the real estate valuation and development advisory?
I like it. I mean, there, you know, you see a handful of candidates each year from real estate. She started as a financial analyst and has been promoted to a manager. She's, you know, leading some trainings for junior staff. And so I think, you know, there's clearly some quantitative chops involved in doing real estate valuation and development. So I like it. And I also think, you know, she had some pretty interesting outside activities. You know, she does this sort of charitable meals program where she's, I guess, the one like handling the operations and logistics of buying. I mean, I guess they deliver 500 meals a month. And so she's like running the logistics of that. I thought her work experience was interesting. I did wonder, you know, she's going to have to explain like, okay, how am I going to go from real estate to consulting? And what is it about that? You know, that like, why is she exiting that sector? And, you know, what does she want to do? And she did have some some comments around her long-term plan, but they were, I think you actually kind of nudged her on this, right? They were a little foggy, and so you wanted some more detail.
Yeah, she's obviously had some life experiences and being exposed to dire poverty in her part of the world. And, you know, she wants to get engaged in trying to help solve those problems or provide some solutions to those problems in the long run. And yeah. We've talked about this before, having real aspirational goals, having laudable goals is something the admissions committees are looking for. But they're also looking to make sure they're plausible. And in her case, she, like you said, Graham, she's just going to connect the dots here, I think, in terms of her current experience, the MBA, going into consulting, and then sort of moving off to this sort of goal path. Now, in her outside of work activities, she's been involved in sort of the social impact side, so she's developing it from that aspect, which is very good, I think.
Yeah.
And okay. I do, again, I think I like candidates that are planning in the long run to be back in their home region, making a big impact, rather than candidates that are using the MBA to relocate to another region, because that's a more developed economy, so their opportunities will be much better. You want to be the sort of person that's going to go home, not in everyone's case, but it's nice to see candidates that plan to return home and make a larger impact.
Yeah, agreed. One thing I wanted to say, you know, I thought it was interesting that she had that question about, does my application fall into this overrepresented pool? And you pretty definitively said, not really, in the comments, and I agree. The thing that I noted with her is that, you know, here's someone from Vietnam, educated at LSE, London School of Economics, in London, in England, and then also has lived in France, and currently, it's unclear where she currently is. I think probably the UK.
She's
still,
in Vietnam.
Oh, she's back in Vietnam. Okay, so like I'm just thinking about, you know, what does that bring to the classroom in terms of experiences? And you know, a lot of these schools talk about they're on the hunt for kind of what we would call a global citizen. You know, people who've really navigated different cultures, and so I think. I think it's terrific. And I will say that, you know, one of the things that admissions officers sometimes struggle with is when you get a candidate from the developing world, and it's a market that maybe you haven't recruited in as much historically. So big difference between getting a candidate from like England or Canada, you know, or the United States versus, say, Vietnam, or, you know, we had someone from Bangladesh on a recent episode, right? So there's sometimes less familiarity with the education system, et cetera. And so my view is that when a candidate from one of those markets has actually attended school, like in the US or in the UK or in a market that's very familiar to the admissions team, that only serves to kind of make it easier for the committee to assess their academic profile. So I'm not worried, and I don't think this is overrepresented. And I think, you know, if anything, she's pretty darn interesting, you know, and I'm again hoping the GRE works out well with the retake, you know, because it's a shame to lose that 330. But even if it's something in the 320s, I think she'll still be very competitive at the schools on her list.
So all her schools on lists are North American or US based. Do you think she should be looking in Europe too, or are you pretty happy with her school choices?
Well, you know, she mentioned she wants to do consulting at Bain or McKinsey. And so the one thing that occurred to me right away is those firms might, I don't know what they're, you know, where they have offices in terms of, you know, obviously they have offices all over North America and throughout Europe. They have offices in Asia too, but I cannot tell you off the top of my head, like, does Bain have a Vietnam office, right? So I wonder, because sometimes what they do with an international candidate, especially if there's kind of a working papers issue, is they'll want to recruit someone like this candidate and send them back, you know, to Vietnam, where they know they can work and can do great things. And so, and yet her post-MBA location is New York. So she's going to need to do some networking. And I think I get, you know, obviously Columbia, Stern, and Penn, and Yale, they're all, I mean, literally either in New York City or within an hour or so on the train. So that'll give her a lot of time to network and hopefully make a strong enough impression to get Bain, McKinsey, maybe some others, BCG, who, you know, a whole bunch of firms to compete to get her to stay. Now, I know she can stay for 1 year with the usual kind of visa situation with getting an MBA. You're allowed to stay on for 1 year. It could be that, you know, the rules change by then, or, you know, or that she can stay that 1 year and get sponsored. But I mean, I think having some flexibility might be smart. So if she's challenged in an interview, like, what happens if you can't stay here? If she were to say, well, you know, actually I'd go to the Bain office in City X where I can work, and maybe it's in somewhere in Vietnam or in a neighboring country where it'd be easier for her to work. So that's just something I'm thinking about as well.
Yeah, and something she should be thinking about in terms of setting herself up even before she applies to the MBA programs, yeah, to make sure she knows the realities of what her short-term goal really means.
Right, and I obviously didn't respond directly to your question about, like, should she look at MBA programs in Europe? And I mean, I think, you know, clearly she'd be a strong candidate at, you know, places like LBS and Oxford and Cambridge and INSEAD. The only thing would be, you know, obviously with an INSEAD and some of these programs, it's like 1 year. And does she want that, or does she want two to make this kind of transition? I suspect she wants to do an internship. And, you know, you can do an internship at some of these short programs, but they're shorter internships and you have to start at a certain time of year in order to get access to them. So it's a little more complicated. But yeah, it sounds like she really wants to be in New York. And so if that's the case, targeting the U.S. probably makes most sense. All right, so our final candidate, our fourth candidate, so this is our wiretaps candidate number four. This person has a 3.0 GPA, 4 years of work experience. They don't want to start business school until the fall of 2021, so a couple years from now. They are currently working as a manager assistant in retail and a retail business in the United States. They'd like to stay in the States after business school. And they want to pivot, it sounds like, to kind of attack a consumer goods company or maybe even do something entrepreneurial. And the target companies that they've listed are Apple, Google, Microsoft, Pepsi, and Procter & Gamble. They, you know, a couple of interesting things. So number one, they have a law degree. They actually went to law school in Peru. They worked there for the government and started a nonprofit. They also have another master's degree in human rights, which I guess they pursued in Spain. So, you know, I guess, as you know, as we were discussing earlier, undergraduate degree plus a couple of other degrees in terms of law and human rights. And they're targeting Berkeley, Cornell, Duke, Indiana, and Michigan. You had a bit of a kind of back and forth with this candidate on ApplyWire on the website. So maybe you could kind of walk us through what your thoughts are and what are the challenges for this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, a few things just stood out to me when I first read this candidate's profile. And not forgetting that they're planning to apply in another year. So they've got some time to really think through this process and set themselves up for a strong candidacy. This person's, you know, if they pursue an MBA, it will be their fourth degree. So what they don't want to do is come across to a business school as being simply a degree collector. You know, I do a degree in this, so let me do a degree in that. You know, it's just, you know, business school admissions folks want to admit and enroll ambitious people that are going to be successful outside of academia for the most part. Very few people are using the MBA to then go on and do a further degree. So making sure that they come across as someone with really strong professional career goals post-MBA is going to be important. And making, yes, a very strong rationale for getting the MBA degree, having already acquired three other degrees. That was part of our conversation, I think. The candidate has a low undergraduate GPA, so they were concerned about, yeah, that and hoping that the JD and so on, as other academic degrees, sort of overcome that a little bit. That said, they're still going to need to do well in their test score. So really pushing for, you know, as high GRE score as they can, you know, in the 320s or something like that, that would be very good. The other thing that struck me is their current experience. They're in the United States. They're working in retail as some kind of retail manager. So this is not your typical pre-MBA experience from a lot of the candidates that we hear from applying to top business schools. And, you know, a cynical admissions committee person, not that I'm saying admissions folks are cynical by any means, but, you know, a thought might be that they've used that role simply to get into the United States or to get in, yeah, to get into that geography. So making this candidate really needs to do a very good job of articulating each of their career moves and academic and geography moves so that they make sense. And having articulated all that, that needs to then go into the broader context of why MBA, why now, and what they plan to do. So they've got quite a lot of work to do in that regard. I mean, we've had some dialogue on ApplyWire, and the candidates sort of come back to us and assured us that, you know, each of their situations has enabled them to make an impact and to do some good things. And, you know, they're clearly a smart person, and I think they're clearly a person that makes impact, gets involved, can do interesting things. They just got to make sure that their story works well, and that their goals make very good sense. And I don't know that that's quite there at this point, but they've got another year before they've got to really convince others.
Yeah, and my thing, when I read this profile, the cynic in me was sort of like, okay, is this person, like you said, a degree collector, or what we would also call sometimes in admissions office a lifetime student, someone just bouncing from degree to degree to degree because they just want to forever be a student? So that's sometimes a concern. I also was worried that, you know, okay, the two graduate degrees that this person has are, I presume, wholly qualitative, right? A law degree and a human rights degree. And so then you could say, well, maybe their undergrad had some, you know, quantitative coursework that would, you know, suggest readiness for business school. But the problem is that in light of their GPA of 3.0, it does make you wonder, are the grades going to be very good in that area? So yeah, there's some concerns. And I think, you know, taking the GRE and getting a high score could put some of that to rest, right? And also building an alternative transcript, as you suggested here. You know, imagine this person gets a 325 and, you know, takes calculus and statistics, gets A's, has a really tight story around, you know, the transitions they've made career-wise and where they're heading next. It could come together, and they have time. That's the beauty of this, is that I love it when people post, you know, 2 years out from business school, because there's like a full year in which we can give them advice and help them kind of find the right path. So I think, you know, this person should be applauded for, you know, already, you know, kind of really putting their plan together. Because we know, you and I both know, there's some people who roll into this process in September thinking they're going to apply in the first round for, you know, for this coming year. So there's a lot to say that's good. And I also should mention that the JD that they earned, you know, I think you alluded to this, but they actually graduated magna cum laude from the JD. So clearly, you know, can be a good student. I just would worry about, like, where's the quantitative expertise or the chops to kind of survive business school. But overall, I think, yeah, there's a lot to work with here. I mean, clearly they're doing a lot of cool stuff outside of work, and they seem pretty passionate, and I mean, they bring an interesting perspective to the classroom when they get there.
And I think with the candidate having another year before they're planning to apply, they can actively seek out more aggressive roles in their current work situation, more interesting projects with the eye on the prize, i.e. having, you know, very recent impactful experiences to address directly in their business school essay. So, you know, I think anyone that's applying to business school, when you know that you're applying, so hopefully a year ahead, 6 months ahead, or whenever it is, it's great if you can go to your bosses, if you're in a place that's obviously open to you pursuing an MBA, if you can go to your bosses and say, look, this is what I want to do. It's rather ambitious, but could you help place me on some projects that really help me sort of learn more and get more involved and do some interesting things. This guy has that opportunity.
Yeah, and I know a lot of our listeners are saying, gosh, my boss is not supporting me when I apply and I can't really tell them. But if you are in a situation where your company knows that it's an aspiration of yours and can actually support you along the way, not financially, but just in terms of giving you opportunities at work. That's always a great thing to do. Obviously, you know, if your employer, you don't want them to know, your annual bonus will be affected, or they'll just outright let you go when they know that you're heading out anyway, then you got to be hold your cards closer to the vest, but you can still seek out challenges and new responsibilities in the workplace. So yeah, that's good general advice. That might be our episode lesson of the day, you know, seek out those opportunities at work, whether your boss knows or not. But yeah, this was an interesting candidate. And I think, you know, across the board, and yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry, at work and outside of work. So if you're working on volunteer projects, then step up that involvement too, rather than simply volunteer, sort of lead the volunteer effort, you know, do something that sort of really helps you stand out. But when you're doing that kind of stuff, do it about stuff you're passionate about. Don't just go through the motions simply for the business school application.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You'll be much better at convincing an admissions committee of your passion if it's something that is genuine. So so this kind of wraps up our, you know, our latest episode for Wiretaps. Again, as we've been saying in the last few episodes, not a lot is happening on, say, LiveWire or DecisionWire because, you know, the admission season from last year is kind of winding down. But ApplyWire has been, you know, going wild with people submitting their candidacies. Alex and I are trying to keep up with you all and get as many of you as you can, as we can, onto Wiretaps. We know that you love to hear us talk through your profile. So keep them coming. And yeah, we'll stay tuned, and there'll be many more to come. So thanks so much, Alex, for taking part.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Graham, for having me.
Sure. We'll see everyone real soon.
Take care.